content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Jen Rogers from the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is all about pets. For the next half hour, I shall be reading to you from Fortune.com, ScienceAlert.com, Catster.com, and Dogster.com. On today's program, we'll start with an article from Fortune.com titled, Pets Make for the Best Financial Advisors and Motivators. They Force You to Be More Mindful About Your Spending, Study Shows, by Sydney Lake. Pets really are becoming the major alternative to having children. In fact, more than half of pet owners not only consider their pets to be a part of their family, but they say they are just as much a part of their family as a human member, according to Pew Research Center. Pets show affection and can give life more meaning, but they undoubtedly become a major line item in a budget, considering the cost of insurance, vet care, food, shelter, and of course, the trendiest bandanas and leashes. Still, having a pet is considerably more affordable than having a child. Parents can expect to pay between $16,000 to $18,000 per year, according to USDA estimates. Pets, on the other hand, cost their owners a little more than $1,300 per year, according to Empower, a financial services company offering planning, investing, and advice. While having a pet is more affordable than having a child, these lovable furry friends actually serve as a great catalyst for financial health. Indeed, nearly 40% of people say having a pet inspires them to be more financially responsible, and another 36% says they motivate them to reach their financial goals, according to Empower's survey of 1,000 pet owners in the U.S. This is particularly true for Julio Badola, a wealth manager with Lord Murray. He and his wife have 6 dogs, which significantly impacts our spending, he tells Fortune. Regular expenses for food, healthcare, grooming, and other consistent costs teach owners the importance of budgeting, planning for future expenses, and building emergency funds for unexpected vet trips or paying for vet insurance, Badola says. Because we plan accordingly, we're able to make it work. Pets can be a primer for having kids. While they're not ready to have kids, Badola says caring for pets gives them an eye-opening sense of responsibility and prepares them for making ongoing financial investments. However, he acknowledges that the cost of having a child is still much greater than caring for a pet, especially when you factor in childcare and education. But pet parents still have to take into consideration their pets when making other major financial decisions, like buying or renting a home. Not all homes are suitable for pets or even allow them there. This similarly plays into other major costs, such as planning and saving for travel. You need to factor in pet costs, whether it's boarding them or taking them with you, Badola says. Good money habits and not so good money habits. Owning 3 cats and planning to adopt a puppy to her household in the next month has inspired millennial public relations specialist Christy Hedrick to adopt some good money habits as well as some not so good money habits, she tells Fortune. The good money habits include always having money stored away in case an emergency, which happened to were to happen to one of her pets. Plus, her cats are on a special diet, so she has to incorporate the cost of their food into her monthly budget. However, the not-so-good money habits tend to come from wanting to spoil my pets and give them new treats or toys, Hendrick says. My animals have plenty of toys, so that's not always the best way to spend some extra cash that I may have. Still, Hendrick and other professionals say it's incredibly important for pet owners to really understand how much it costs to raise a pet. Allie Smith, CEO and founder of dog training company Rebarkable, encourages aspiring pet parents to do their research about the average cost for their breed, as well as any health issues and temperament issues that come with owning that type of animal. If you choose to rescue, be aware that with unknown health and temperament issues, you could face large health bills and training bills in order to achieve a happy, harmonious home, Smith says. Budget for those. Pet parents spend the most on golden retrievers, beagles, German shepherds, Labrador retrievers, and dachshunds, according to Empower. Other costs of pet ownership stem from lifestyle choices and employment. The Empower survey shows, however, that pet parents are willing to make major life changes with their pets in mind. Nearly 60% of respondents said they switched jobs for more pet-friendly benefits while the pay was the same. And more than a quarter said they would take a pay cut with flexible hours in order to spend more time with their pet. Think critically about your lifestyle, Smith says. Do you need support from a doggy daycare or a dog walker? All of that costs money. Making the commitment is potentially 14 years of financial commitment. Sure, there's no college or cars to buy, but pets can be a costly luxury in our lives. Next, from sciencealert.com by Owen Cumming, titled, Your Choice of Pet Could Predict What Kind of Personality You Have. The old adage, fighting like cats and dogs, would have us believe that the two species are irreconcilably different. Not only are cats and dogs perfectly capable of getting along, the perceived divide between these furry friends might be better attributed to their owners. A recent survey of 329 people found distinct differences between the personalities of cat and dog owners when faced with stressful or isolating circumstances. James Cook University psychologists Jessica Oliva and Leah Michelle Baines looked at how well pet ownership could predict the big five personality traits: extroversion, agreeableness, openness, conscientiousness, and neuroticism, as well as personal resilience in pet owners. Dog ownership has been associated with reduced loneliness in people living alone during periods of prolonged isolation, such as during COVID lockdown, says Oliva. So our research investigated the predictive power of dog versus cat ownership on personality traits and resilience. Baines and Oliva's findings suggest dog owners are more inclined to show resilience in stressful circumstances, while cat owners tend to be more neurotic. The higher resilience of dog owners may be why they were found to be less lonely than non-dog owners during lockdown, says Oliva. Well, that's not exactly a glowing report for cat owners. It doesn't explain why there's a difference between cat and dog owner personalities. Is there something about owning a dog that somehow builds resilience? Are cats simply so neurotic that it rubs off on their owners, or is it the other way around? It's a commonly held belief that pet choice reveals a lot about a person's character, with some people even letting pet preference influence who they're willing to date. These perceptions might not always be fair, but science seems to back up the notion that cat people and dog people have relatively consistent differences. Owning a cat or dog is unlikely to make drastic differences to personality traits. Rather, most people just choose a pet that's suited to the personality that they already have. Simply put, people who are naturally predisposed to being resilient may like dogs more, rather than the dog causing people to be resilient, says Oliva. A Mexican study found that the perceived emotional cost of a relationship with cats was lower, making them easier pets to keep. On the other hand, the high-cost relationships with dogs lead to greater emotional closeness. Perhaps if you're a little high-strung or tend to feel stressed and highly self-aware, an independent and relatively self-sufficient pet like a cat might be for you. On the other hand, if you enjoy dealing with challenges, taking on responsibilities, and emotionally investing in others, then you might be inclined to provide the attention and care needed to raise a dog. That said, there are a lot of factors that come into a person's pet choice that don't necessarily reflect their personality. Oliva's study also indicated lifestyle habits, living situations, and affinity for that particular kind of pet also drove people's decisions. It might even be that our pet preferences are ingrained in our genes. Interestingly, there's evidence to support the idea that genes guide ownership of a particular species. It may be that influences on ownership are linked with genetically derived personality traits. So both the personality trait and propensity to own a particular animal are inherited, says Oliva. Whatever factors might influence it, pet ownership should always be carefully considered. The decision to acquire a pet at any time should always be well thought out, with a commitment to care for the animal for the duration of its lifetime and with the animal's welfare at the forefront of the decision, says Oliva. While there might be something to be said for rising to the occasion with pet ownership, caring for an animal won't necessarily change your personality or help your mental health. You might want to become more resilient or less neurotic, but the best pet is always the pet that's best suited for you. These findings were reported in Anthrozoos. Next, we'll move on to an article on catster.com titled Living in a Multi-Pet Household, Which Pets to Choose and How to Get Along by Nicole Cosgrove. A multi-pet household is one with multiple pets, but typically refers to pets of different species and not just breeds. Most multi-species households combine cats and dogs because these are the two most common pets, but they can also incorporate animals like birds, reptiles, and small caged animals. Is it possible to keep a peaceful and pleasant multi-pet household? It is possible, but there are some steps and will help making living conditions better for everybody. And while you might be able to have certain species sharing the same space, you may also have to accept that you won't be able to have mice running freely around pet cats or guinea pigs around dog breeds with a high prey drive. Pros of a multi-pet household. Having one pet can be a great experience for you and the family, and while there will be challenges to keeping multiple pets, it also offers several benefits to you, the rest of your human family, and the animals themselves. More company for your pets. Many types of animals are social animals, which means they prefer to have company rather than being left alone. While this usually refers to animals of the same species, it can also refer to animals of different species that form a close bond. For example, a cat and a dog can form almost as close as a bond as two cats or two dogs. They will keep each other company while you're at work or while you're out of the house. This can help prevent anxiety and depression by offering fulfillment to the animals. More company for you. Having one pet means some company around the house, but having multiple pets can mean that you're never alone. If you're not an animal lover, this might sound like a detriment, of course. But if you do like pets, then having a crowd of them can make a house feel like a home. Better mental and physical health. Pets have been shown to improve the mental health of their owners. This was especially apparent when people around the world were in lockdown and unable to leave their homes. As well as turning to family members, many people turn to their pets for companionship. Pets can also be good for your physical health as well as your mental health. Dogs need regular walks, and even cats need plenty of playtime to relieve their boredom and ensure that they are fulfilled. Cons of a multi-pet household. While having multiple pets sounds like a dream to some owners, it might not be for others. And there are some pitfalls that you should consider, regardless of which side of the debate you stand on. More mess. Cats, dogs, rabbits, bearded dragons, and parrots all have one thing in common. They make some mess. In fact, this is true of all animals. Whether it is cat litter being tracked through the house or birdseed and bird poop that needs clearing off the bottom of a cage, animals need cleaning up after. You might feel like having an extra pet won't create much more or less mess, but you might be surprised. Greater commitment. Similarly, having multiple pets means greater commitment of time. You will need to spend some time with every pet every day to ensure that no single pet is getting preferential treatment. A single pet requires quite a time commitment, so having three or four pets means you will likely be spending a lot of time exercising your animals, cleaning up after them, feeding them, and meeting their other requirements. When you go away or you need somebody to look after your animals for a night, it will be more difficult to find a temporary caretaker for a menagerie of animals too. Higher costs. Having more animals means more food, high vet bills, and depending on the types of pets, more cages and equipment. The cost of these different items and services adds up. If you do get multiple pets, consider ways to save money, such as taking out multi-pet insurance policy or trying to get a deal on food and essentials for all of your animals. They take up more space. Whether you keep small caged animals like mice and rats, animals that need larger confined areas like some snakes, or those that roam free around your house like cats and dogs, they all take up space. Adding another animal will mean handing over more of your living space. You may need an extra seat on the sofa, another wardrobe top for a cat cave, or extra floor space for a guinea pig hutch, but it all adds up. There will be stress. Owning pets is deeply rewarding and can be incredibly gratifying. It can also be quite stressful, and even the most placid animals might struggle to get along with others at first. Be prepared for some stress and some difficult times, especially in the beginning. Pet suitability. If you do intend on keeping multiple pets, choosing the right species and the right breeds can make your life a lot easier. For example, keeping a free-roaming guinea pig and a greyhound is never likely to work out because the greyhound is a sight hound and it will chase any small animal it sees darting around. Dogs. Dogs have been domesticated for thousands of years, and while they were once more likely to be kept as working animals, today's dogs tend to enjoy a life of luxury living in their homes and sharing our everyday lives. There are hundreds of breeds of dogs recognized around the world, as well as mixed breeds. All breeds have slightly different traits, and every individual dog has its own character. But those with a high prey drive are not generally suitable for living with small animals because they will look like and act like prey. Many dogs will get along with cats, however, and can get along with other dogs. The friendliest breeds that are most likely to do well in a multi-pet household are a Golden Retriever. The Golden Retriever is an understanding, empathetic breed that is widely used as a service dog. It is also considered one of the best breeds for first-time dog owners, families, and pretty much anybody who wants a dog. The friendliness that the Golden shows is not only reserved for humans either. And this breed will generally do very well with other dogs, cats, and potentially even small animals like hamsters and birds. Labrador Retriever. The Labrador Retriever is similar in many respects to the Golden Retriever, except it has a shorter coat and is generally a bit more comical and goofier. It is a great companion for playful dogs and cats, but you should always take care when introducing new animals, even if they are sweet as a lab. Standard Poodle. The Standard Poodle is businesslike in its attitude, but it is also friendly and can be paired with other dogs as well as cats. The breed is known for being hypoallergenic, so it's less likely to cause allergic reactions in humans. And because it sheds less than breeds like the heavy-shedding Golden Retriever, this breed can keep mess and cleaning levels down. Cocker Spaniel. A Cocker Spaniel is a playful little pup that will generally get along with all humans, including strangers, as well as other dogs and even cats. The breed is smaller than the likes of the Retrievers and the Standard Poodle, which means the Cocker Spaniel might be better suited to cats that are a little nervous or anxious. Cats. Some people might think of cats as being solitary animals that don't like the company of others, but under the right circumstances, they can be incredibly social. They will usually get along well with other cats and get along with dogs with proper social introductions. Although there are exceptions, cats should not usually be kept with smaller animals because they will predate animals like mice and hamsters and may even attempt to take on birds. The cat breeds most likely to get along with other animals and settle into a multi-pet household are Maine Coon. The Maine Coon is recognizable for its giant size as well as the beautiful tufts of fur around the ears. The size of the breed means it can get along with dogs and isn't likely to feel as intimidated as some smaller breeds will. Despite their size, they are gentle cats and they make friends well. Manx. The distinguishable feature of the Manx cat is the lack of tail. This is a very intelligent breed that can learn to open doors, and the breed's love of water means yours may even learn to turn on the faucet or find some other ways to indulge in its favorite pastime of paddling and splashing around. Ragdoll. The Ragdoll is a beautiful cat that gets its name for the fact that it will collapse into a human's lap or arms and go completely limp, like a ragdoll when it wants love. And its affection won't usually stop at the humans in the house. You can expect a ragdoll to get along with other felines and friendly dogs. In fact, this is one breed that might be able to be introduced to smaller animals. Birds. Smaller birds like finches should be kept in their cages when in a multi-pet household. They may want to investigate cats because they do not have the same natural instinct to get away from a potential predator. Larger parrot species, on the other hand, might want to square up to the cat, which can lead to fighting. It's generally best to keep other animals out of the room when you let your birds out of the cage for their daily exercise. Small animals. Some animals, like mice and hamsters, are not a threat to other pets. But they are prey animals, and that means they can trigger the predator in animals like cats, dogs, and even some larger bird breeds. Keep small animals caged and ensure that the room is clear of potential threats from other animals before letting them out. Reptiles. Some reptiles are predators and may attack small caged animals. This is especially true of species like monitor lizards, who are big enough to even try and take on puppies and small kittens. This is another type of pet that is best kept apart from other animals when they're all out of their cages. How to introduce new animals. When introducing new animals to a multi-pet household, always take your time and make gradual introductions. Never throw them together and hope they get along, because this is more likely to cause anxiety and may make future introductions even more challenging. Also ensure that all animals have their own space to retreat to, especially if you're introducing cats and dogs. And while it is possible to introduce lots of types of different animals, there may be some cases where introductions fail. Put together a schedule for cleaning and caring for your animals. This doesn't just benefit you, but most of your pets will appreciate having a routine. Making plans regarding what you will do when you're on holiday or if you need to go away for the night. Finding somebody to look after one dog is relatively easy compared to having to find a sitter for a dozen different animals. Conclusion. Keeping multiple pets can be beneficial for the pets themselves. Offering company and entertainment for all animals can also benefit you, but it does take more commitment than keeping a single pet. Think about the characters of your existing animals before introducing new pets, and don't just assume that pets will get along eventually. There may be some cases where introductions are never possible. Monitor those that you do introduce to make sure they do not show signs of aggression, anxiety, or depression. Next, we'll move on to an article from Dogster.com titled Things I've Been Wrong About and I'm Not Too Proud to Admit It by Dr. Karen Kanowski. Hi, I'm Dr. Karen. And, you know, I have five funny dogs, Poppy, Bailey, Coda, Ned, and Fred. I found there are three stages to being a good veterinarian. One, newly graduated, worrying that you know nothing. Two, gaining confidence, thinking that you know everything. Three, years of experience, realizing you can never know everything. The reason we can't know everything is that it is simply impossible for one person to know and remember every detail of anatomy, physiology, disease, treatment, or behavior. Plus, our understanding of these things is constantly changing. When you start to believe you have nothing left to learn, you start down a slippery slope toward narrow-mindedness and failure. It is a stage that most vets will experience, which makes what makes a great vet is coming out the other side, being open to new information and differing points of view. I wanted to take this opportunity to revisit some ideas that I once quote-unquote knew, and I have since learned that I was either completely off base or that there are a number of valid points of view. Nutrition and raw feeding. Over the last few years in particular, I've come to realize how much our national education is driven by the pet food industry. More specifically, the large companies that control the vast majority of pet food brands. I definitely came away from university with a clear idea of what was quote-unquote good pet food and what wasn't. Throughout most of my career, I would steer my clients toward the two major veterinary pet food brands, taking little time to really explore other options. Don't get me wrong, these foods are a good option, and I still use them as part of my pets' and patients' diets, but I no longer believe they are the best. Until quite recently, I was, at best, skeptical about raw food diets. While I am still wary of potential for foodborne pathogens, particularly after seeing an entire little pup succumb to botulism from some incorrectly stored meat, I believe that raw diets definitely have a place in canine and feline nutrition. When stored correctly and formulated to meet nutritional requirements, there are actually some major benefits to raw feeding. My personal favorite these days is the fresh frozen diets that combine the benefits of raw food with the safety of gentle cooking and the confidence of feeding a balanced diet. For me, price and convenience are the only reasons to choose kibble, and that's not something I would have said 5 years ago. Behavior. I was very much a subscriber to the dominance hierarchy approach to dog behavior and training, believing in a linear relationship between members of a pack. Following this belief, I recommended that my clients assert dominance and ensure submission from their dogs. In the past couple of years, I have learned of a slightly different view of pack behavior, with the individuals assuming different roles within a group. Although a lot of what I previously thought and taught still applies, it is important for dog owners to establish themselves in a leadership role. This different approach has allowed me to better understand the dynamics between different dogs and allow me to tailor my training and interactions. Spaying and castration. I train in Australia, where there is a considerable stray and abandoned dog and cat population, which has had a significant influence on recommendations about whether or not to spay or castrate and at what age. I was taught to perform these surgeries before or at 6 months of age, something I'm still happy to do with cats, but not with dogs. We know that early age spaying reduces the risks of mammary cancer in dogs, but this risk increases only slightly after the first season, but significantly more after the second. Allowing female dogs to reach sexual maturity before spaying, particularly large and giant breeds who may not reach the stage until 2 to 3 years old, is just as important to reducing their cancer risks, and it can have major health implications if performed too early. Similarly with male dogs, having a blanket castration age of 6 months can seriously impair some dogs' social and physical development, while for some it may be the ideal age. Some males have low testosterone levels and may never require castration, while others will be so sexually frustrated that they won't respond to training or commands without it. There are breeds like Rottweilers whose risk of osteocarcinoma, bone cancer, may actually increase with neutering. So I've learned that it's far better to treat each case individually rather than have a set-in-stone policy. Holistic and alternative therapies. If you'd asked me 5 years ago about my opinion of holistic treatments, I would have rolled my eyes and said they were a load of nonsense. Since then, I've undertaken a course in veterinary acupuncture. I've become open to the idea of Reiki, and I'm very keen on exploring the herbalistic manipulation of the endocannabinoid system. Realizing that holistic treatments are about diagnosing and treating the body as a whole, rather than being the airy-fairy methods I once thought them to be, has opened my eyes to the wider world of therapeutic options. The biggest lesson. Look, I'm not going to lie. I've heard some crazy, absurd, and even dangerous ideas from pet owners over the years. And it can sometimes make you a bit jaded about listening to different opinions. But some of the more interesting and nuanced approaches to pet care have also come from my clients. I just had to be willing to listen to them and do my own research. Coming to terms with things I was wrong about has not been disheartening. It's been freeing. because I know that I can be open to learning new ideas and seeing things from different perspectives. As Socrates once said, the only true wisdom is knowing that you know nothing. Next, we'll head back to catster.com to read an article titled, How Can I Contact a Vet If I'm in the Middle of Nowhere? Five Ideas to Help by Ashley Bates. It's every pet parent's worst nightmare, being stuck somewhere and not being able to access a vet if your pet is hurt or sick. If you found yourself in one of these situations or you're heading somewhere with limited access to vets, you might be trying to cover your bases. This article aims to help every pet parent access resources even in the bleakest times. So if you are currently or could be stuck somewhere you can't access vet care, hopefully one of these ideas can help you get the pet care that your pet the care they need even in the absence of nearby veterinarians. 1. Check for the closest vets. Even if there are no standard vet offices nearby, there might be access to emergency vets. Some clinics also offer call-outs or after-hours services. While this might vary from state to state and area to area, it's always best to contact services near you to see what kind of care you can get for your pets. Keep in mind that emergency vets are much more expensive than standard veterinarians, so while you may pay more out of pocket, it's certainly worth it if your pet's life is at stake. 2. Chat to a vet online. Thanks to technology, we have more options now than ever to contact professionals. If you have access to the internet or cell phone service, you can always chat with a live veterinarian through vet telehealth services like PangoVet. You may be able to do a video conference or use a chat feature to explain what's going on with your pet. While they can't provide a diagnosis or prescriptions, they can let you know how to manage your pet yourself or if they need to be seen somewhere in person as soon as possible. 3. Call a vet. Whether it's your vet's office or a closer veterinarian, you can always reach out via phone. Even if you can't access treatment, a vet might be able to give some general advice over the phone. They might include treatments like proper hydration, wound dressing, and other at-home solutions. The ultimate care will depend on the issue and guidance of the professional you're speaking with. If you're far away from your personal vet, you can still call the office for contact. They can advise you, especially since they are familiar with your pet and their current health. 4. Call a hotline. There are hotlines you can call to help with your pets. Whether it's Pet Poison Helpline, ACK Vet Line, and the Animal Humane Society's Pet Helpline, hotlines are designed to help situations of dire need. You can provide the professional with as many details as you possibly can. They might advise you on how to take care of your pet at home, but they might also have other resources available. 5. Contact a rural or traveling vet. If you're in rural areas that don't have direct access to vet care, you're likely not the only one. In areas like this, there are traveling veterinarians who can make house calls. You can ask the locals how they receive vet care. They might be able to point you in the right direction. So finding access to vet care can be very difficult sometimes. But not only is it good to be prepared before the accident occurs, it's also good to know of all your options when you face a dilemma to ensure your pet's care. Illness, disease, and injury can happen at any time. The only thing you can do is access the resources given to you and follow the instructions you receive. We've run out of time for today's episode of All About Pets. Be sure to listen next time. We hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Jen Rogers, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. All About Pets is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.